Today on the Dennis Michael Lynch podcast, we have a future ready interview, and it's with a very special person who's been on this show before. Tiffany Justice, co-founder of Moms for Liberty, going to be talking about education in America, both today and what it looks like tomorrow. So get ready, because it's all unfiltered.
Dennis Michael Lynch gives you his word, and he will never let you down. He will always fight for America.
The only one who really puts his money where his mouth is Dennis Michael Lynch.
Hello, I'm Dennis Michael Lynch, and I thank you for joining me today. Today I have both a friend and a colleague with us, Tiffany Justice. She happens to live in my town, and I had the pleasure of meeting her at the very beginning of launching a new organization focused in on education in America, giving parents the rights that they deserve in assisting with their children's education, if not leading it. That's what I always thought it was. And I remember going to the first Moms for Liberty meeting that I had ever even heard of. A friend of mine was looking to be a leader of this group. Tiffany and I drove in the car together for about an hour, had conversations just about everything education, and then some, because when Tiffany starts talking about education, it is like a tsunami of information. And the woman is a walking encyclopedia, and she's also a mom who served on the Board of Education for her district when her kids were in school. And she lasted there for a while and said, oh my God, the things I'm seeing are absolutely insane. And so Moms for Liberty has jumped up and become a major, major organization in the United States of America. And the reason why you could put your hat on the fact that it is major is because the left is attacking her and her organization almost on a daily basis. And when that starts to happen, you realize that you are ruffling feathers. And when you're ruffling feathers, it means that you're actually making progress, and the progressives don't like real progress. So with that being said, I'm going to right now bring in Tiffany Justice from Moms for Liberty and just say, A, you look wonderful.
Thank you.
And B, I am just flabbergasted over your growth. Let me say that I've been in the media business for 15 years, and I've seen some people go from 0 to 100 very quickly. You have got to be in the top five of people that have just gone boom. I mean, just the hard work that I see you put into this organization. So before we get into, we're going to break this conversation into threes, all right? And I didn't prepare you for this. I should have. This whole interview series that we do, we tag it as Future Ready. And the point is take a look at where we are today. And instead of just complaining about it for what it is, where will things look like? What will things look like tomorrow? A, if we make change, and B, if we don't. So please keep that in the back of your mind as we're chatting. Well, we're going to break this conversation into three parts. Number one is the general state of education in the country. Number two is the power of the teachers' union and the Board of Education. And number three is some of the crap that is going on in schools that you are also fighting against that I can't talk about on Facebook. I can't talk about on YouTube. I can't even talk about on Apple Podcasts without getting some kind of strikes or taken off. So that part of the conversation is going to be just on Team DML only. But before that, the things we're going to talk about are very, very powerful and very, very important for anybody who is a grandparent or a parent. With that being said, if we could just start off with a brief synopsis of how big is Moms for Liberty right now at this current point in time?
Yeah, almost in 49 states. We're in 48 right now, hoping for Vermont any day. Very excited about that. Watch out, Ben and Jerry. We're growing every day. I mean, you know, you talk about the growth of Moms for Liberty. It is really remarkable when Tina and I take a step back and we look with, you know, as we've grown and the national team has grown and the chapters on the ground have grown and we're seeing the impact that the chapters are having. It's really an amazing thing to be a part of. But every day I'm reminded about the fact that we are just getting started and that the work that we see that can happen in the future, like you're talking about, that's what we as parents think about all the time. We are invested in the future of the United States of America in a very unique and special way.
Now, how many, without giving the total number, because I think people always kind of like to keep that a little secret, but Are we over 100,000 members?
Yeah, we're over 130,000 members.
Over 130,000. Mm-hmm. And now, if I'm not mistaken, because I've lived here in Indian River County, and that's as far as we go about where we live, but Indian River County, I've been here now for a little over 3 years, and I think I met you almost at the outset of that. So did you start this 3 years ago?
Yeah, January 1st, 2021.
Aside from your hard work,
well, and the mom's hard work on the ground, I want to be clear. Like, Moms for Liberty is a grassroots organization. Right. Tina and I saw an opportunity to help parents to be more effective in their advocacy. We were watching as parents were coming to the school districts or dealing with the government through COVID, right? Whatever process that was, city council, county commission, what have you, state house. And they didn't know how to engage. So there was a lot of frustration. And when people get frustrated and then the government starts shutting you down and censoring your speech and cutting off your mics, that there's tension that grows. And we were watching as our children were watching us get very angry as a country, right? Parents were very upset during COVID. And so this organization has always been about the change you make in your own backyard.
Look, I've been doing this for a long time. And you and I text back and forth from time to time. And I haven't always agreed with some of the strategy you've taken. And we'll get into that, right? We'll get into that, especially towards the end when it comes to media. Only because I do care about you. I care about your organization. And I say, oh my God, she's going on 60 Minutes. Oh my God, she's going on Joy Reid. We'll get to that. And I say to you, they're going to, and I, to try to protect you, I say they're going to try to destroy you because that's what they—that's what they did
to
me.
That's their job.
Yeah, when I was at my height,
I expect nothing less.
Of course, that's their job, and it means that you're impacting. I mean, they did it to me back in my days when I was making all my immigration films. I was getting hour specials on Fox News, and they were coming out of the woodwork. And you want to get your word out, and you want to go up against the left because that's where the, you know, the softball questions that come from the right, it's almost like we're singing the same song all the time. So when you get to go against somebody else, and my first thing when I saw you on there, I said, oh my God, they're going to try to destroy her. And all I'm thinking about is you, your family, you know, and stuff like that. So that's when I say I disagree, that's what I'm talking about. Don't put yourself in the line.
I'm a big girl though. I know.
You are.
You know, Tina and I make very calculated decisions.
But one of the things that I, one of the reasons why I think you have grown as much as you have, and, you are extremely humble. So every time I hear somebody talk about your hard work, you always knock that down and give credit to everybody versus taking it internally. I think it's just
because Moms for Liberty is nothing if not the moms on the ground, because I am a mom on the ground. I go to my chapter meeting. You know, this is about the fact that our American government somehow thinks they know better than parents for their kids. And they're actively trying to drive a wedge between the parent and the child in our public schools. And so you ask me why 60 Minutes or I'm going where the fight is. You know, and then when you win, then you advance, right? You have these battles and you win like 60 Minutes or like Joy Reid, that was a win, right? And then we advance. It's like, I mean, we're in the middle of a cultural revolution.
No, I'm with you 100%. And for those of you who are watching on Facebook and YouTube, please know that you're going to miss one of the best parts of this because Tiffany was on Joy Reid. And Tiffany just owned this woman, owned her. But it has some sexual innuendo to it because Joy Reid wanted to bring it up. So we can't put it on Facebook. That's how disgusting things are, that we can't talk about what they talk on mainstream media, on television. She's going to talk to you about dildos, and that's as much as I want to go into that right now. And I can't put that on Facebook because they'll rip it down going against the standards. But Joy Reid's allowed to do it. Now, with that being said, let's, before we get into the stuff about CRT and all this other different LGBTQ and book banning and all the other stuff, let's just go really to the nuts and bolts of education. From what I understand as an American and how I grew up, the point of going to school was so this way I could learn the basics, how to read, how to write, how to do math, what is science, what is culture, what is social studies and things of that nature. So this way I would be able to compete in society. That has changed, and we're going to talk about that change toward the latter part. But when we just look at the status of how our children are scoring, what it is they can and cannot do, do you have sort of a, Can you paint for us a picture of how bad things are when it comes to the core topics, subjects that should be taught in school?
Yeah, the 2022 National Assessment for Educational Progress is a standardized norm test across the United States that's given, told us that only 17% of Black students are reading on grade level in fourth grade, only 21% of Hispanic students, and less than half of white students. Our kids are not doing well. And to be fair, they weren't doing well before COVID either. So don't let the teachers' unions try to tell you there's some learning loss. Of course, there was learning loss. Closing schools for 2 years was possibly the worst decision that's ever been made in this country, honestly.
Agreed.
But the kids weren't doing well before that. And what we've seen is just a steady decline. And as ideology has creeped its way into schools and we've had a focus on this critical lens in teaching, we've gotten further away from reading, writing, and math. And I don't think Americans, in fact, I know, Americans' expectations for education have not changed. Most parents, Dennis, are still sending their kids to school thinking, I'd like my children to read, to write, to do math, to learn skills that will unfold their full potential in life, right? Mm-hmm. So they can do whatever it is they choose to do. And if that's to be a mechanic, then fantastic. If that's to work in a store, fantastic. If that's to be a lawyer, great, right? But whatever those things are. But the goal of public schools in America have changed. Those goals have changed. They're not interested in giving kids practicable skills. They don't need kids to think for themselves. They need kids to be dependent on the government and to be activists, to what it's called, to help them to raise a critical consciousness in the child so that they are a part of the revolution. And I know that sounds crazy to some people who are listening because, you know, it's hard to wrap our minds around the fact that the long march through the institutions has resulted in this moment where we are in the middle of a communist takeover of America. But that is what is happening. And I know it's a lot to say. And, you know, on 60 Minutes, Scott Pelley asked me a question about ideology and my answer truly would have was cultural revolution. And I spoke to him about gender ideology and the like. But we're at a critical moment in America where people need to wake up.
Yeah.
And the schools are a major battleground. And that's why you're seeing all of this in the schools. You know, it's the when you see the divisive curriculum, when you see the reading scores where they are, when you see the gender ideology that's being taught, they don't care about changing your mind. They're done with you. They just want your kids.
I remember when I was in grammar school. I mean, there's certain things about your life you don't forget, right?
Yeah.
My favorite part of, you know, going, I went to a public school, so I was there from kindergarten to sixth, and it was a public school. And my favorite part was lunchtime, going out and playing kickball and stuff like that. But if you strip that away, I remember every Friday I had a spelling test. You know, you'd get your spelling words, you'd have to go in there and you have your spelling test. I remember also having to sit there and, you know, practice script, right? And we'd write letters and all things like that. Are they still doing things like that in school anymore? Because I don't remember my kids coming home with spelling tests.
No, in fact, spelling is often not corrected on a written, if anything is written out. Sometimes spelling, my own son was in a science class answering questions, and he wasn't being made to use complete sentences when he answered the questions, and spelling wasn't being corrected. And I just looked at the teacher, and I was like, what is going on? And he said, well, you know, we don't require the kids to do complete sentences. And I said, I require my son to write in complete sentences, though. That's just my expectation and my threshold. And so, no, the truth is the kids are on the computer. They're on the computer a lot. And we have the future. I think it's really important that we talk about the future of education because things are changing very rapidly. AI is becoming more and more a part of education. There is so much money to be made in the field of technology in education called ed tech. And we have a lot of data privacy issues and data mining issues that are happening with kids in schools. And so this is a perfect storm that is happening that is touching on a lot of different parts of what's going on in America, our fundamental rights as Americans, how we're able to navigate as far as our privacy is concerned. And in the schools, it's just a free-for-all where they are sucking up information about the kids just constantly from their name and to how they're feeling that day and whether or not maybe you have guns in the home, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's what they want to hear
about.
They want
to know. They want to know the answers to those questions.
I guess from a real sort of granular point of view, I can't understand. I mean, I get the left's ideology about, and it's not even just the left. I could see where China would want to influence, whether through TikTok or whatever. And Dennis is going to ask you about a thing that DeSantis just signed into law in a second. But
yeah.
I can't understand why more parents, I mean, you've got 130,000, but we've got 300 plus million people in this country. I mean, your organization should have, as far as I'm concerned, 40 million people at this point. I can't understand why we'd want to strip the basics of education out of school to the point of where the statistics that you just jumped threw out at me are what they are. Why aren't more parents just going that crazy over this?
A lot of parents don't know, honestly, that their kids aren't doing very well in school. I mean, you know, they're not allowed, teachers aren't allowed to give zeros anymore. So grading starts at 50%. We have graduation inflation in America. So when you look at the data for eighth grade students, you'll see that there are districts where in eighth grade, you have 22% of kids reading on grade level, and then graduation in 4 years results in an 85% or 90% graduation rate. That's impossible. That means you're graduating kids who can't read, because there's not a lot of reading remediation happening between eighth grade and 12th grade. It's just not happening. Right. The kids need to learn to read in K, 1, 2, 3. What does the future of education look like in America if we do nothing else besides teach the kids to read before third grade? That's it. Teach the kids to read.
I mean, if you've ever seen somebody who can't read, it's heartbreaking. It's almost like watching, and maybe this is a bad example, but it's almost as painful as watching somebody who looks like they just went through chemotherapy. I mean, the person is so embarrassed and so, you know, like they quiver or whatever it may be. And then it's finally like, I don't know how to read. And it's like, well, you don't know how to
read. There's so much shame.
It is.
Around it. And years of pretending like you know how to read. Years of trying to get by in school. And then we wonder, why do kids have all of these mental health issues? Well, there's no success in mastery anymore. We are not setting the bar high for them and then really encouraging them to reach for everything that they could achieve. We're just lowering the bar and lowering the bar so that the outcomes for the system look better. School districts do two things well. They celebrate themselves and they protect themselves. And they often celebrate themselves, like with graduation rate, find ways to cook the data to make it look right. Indian River County, we can talk about for a second. Right. You know, the scores for the kids haven't gotten better, but the ranking as far as the district compared to other districts in the state have. So what you'll hear the superintendent talk about is, oh yeah, you know, we went up in the rankings. Well, okay, great. That means that the other districts didn't do as well.
Right.
As they've fallen.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, does that mean that some of the things that the superintendent has tried to do, especially going through COVID and then the aftermath of that, has meant that the kids have stabilized and not lost as much? Perhaps. But let's be honest about the fact that you're not teaching more kids to read in Indian River County. You just look better compared to the other people that aren't teaching kids how to read.
So, you know, one of the first times, I mean, before, when you just walked in here, before we started talking, whatever, you had mentioned about when we first met, and I was talking about the impact that illegal immigration has on the education system. I mean, from so many different things.
From
a health standpoint. I mean, you know, measles. Does anybody even remember hearing about measles being in school? Now it's all over the place, and I can tell you where it's coming from. It's coming from the border. So I also remember when I was doing my immigration films, this is going back a while ago, it would cost the taxpayer an extra 50%, up to 50% more to teach a child who is non-speaking English. They've lowered that number a bit, and they try to say, well, we've lowered that down from 50%. Now it's only about 20%. Yeah, because you have so many illegal aliens in the school. Now what you're doing is, instead of teaching one-on-one, you're putting them into a group. But I mean, when you look at the amount of resources that are being taken away from our kids that we're paying into that system through our property tax, when you take a look at how the resources are now going to ESL programs and being taken away from arts and science.
Well, and now every teacher is an English teacher. Now you're a math teacher. All of a sudden you teach English too.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not covering you couldn't possibly cover the amount of material that you would normally try to cover in the class.
How much do you think that the illegal immigration that we've seen since the Obama administration, because it's been huge, how much do you think that even if you go back to George W. Bush, he was just as bad as Biden, as far as I'm concerned. So if you say from 2000, how much do you believe from an educational standpoint, not from a health perspective, from an educational standpoint, is the illegal immigration into the country right now hurting our schools?
So many things are hurting our schools. I mean, you start talking about Obama, you're talking about restorative justice practices that were introduced into the schools during the Obama administration after his Dear Colleague letter. And what that was,
a quota system, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, where he said too many minority kids were being suspended or being expelled or being, you know, being held accountable for behavior that needed to be corrected. And what that resulted in was across the board, forget the skin color of the kid, but just an entrance for bad behavior all the time with no consequences.
Some people say that that's one of the reasons why Parkland wound up.
100% it is.
Yeah, because
and
they
the
didn't
promise program that was a totally Obama era restorative justice program that had been instituted there.
Just to sort of give the detail on that without going too deep. So in other words, let's say, for instance, that out of 100 kids in a school for a whole year that got in trouble, if it was only 10 white kids, 40 Latinos and 50 blacks, the Obama administration sent out to every school, hey, let's make that 33, 33, 33. So when you had a black child, number 34, get in trouble, they weren't getting the punishment.
Yeah, but
they
the
should
practices,
have, right?
Yes, but the practices were thrown across the board. So it didn't matter the color of the skin of the child.
Okay.
It's just a general culture in the school now that's so permissive, right, about bad behavior. And, you know, instead of you being held accountable for your bad behavior in class, we're going to sit with you and have restorative justice. So if you're bullying a kid, now the kid has to sit with you and has to have a discussion. Listen, you know, there is right and wrong in schools. We have made our schools. I think Abigail Schreier just wrote a book, Bad Therapy, and I'm going to try to quote it now. And I don't. She said that we have the restorative justice's programs, and I'm not going to quote her well, but basically we have, it's weaponized empathy, right, in the schools, and that we have now, in the name of not holding certain kids accountable, we're not holding anybody accountable,
right,
and all the kids are getting hurt. And it's just a really bad culture. And the teachers are leaving because of the discipline issues, because of the behavior issues. There's a parent component to this too that we should talk about. But teachers are leaving, and the unions will like to say, oh, the teachers are leaving, because they're not leaving because of involved parents who are concerned about whether or not kids are learning how to read in school. They're not leaving because we're questioning the books in the library. They're leaving because they're getting hit by these kids and the administration's not letting them do anything about it.
Hit, they're getting pummeled. I mean, how many things, I mean, Dennis is going to bring into this right now. I mean, Dennis and I do a daily program here on news and politics. And it seems like every week we at least have one or two new videos of a teacher getting their ass kicked the classroom. Being abused by students with no problem. You got fights breaking out in the hallways. There's nobody stopping these fights. And I think one of the reasons why that's happening is because social media has become such a prevalent part of the child's day that if you beat the crap out of somebody, you got a good chance of going viral.
Yeah, but let me just also layer on now this critical pedagogy that we're seeing. It's Marxism. Marxism's destruction, right? Destroy. And it's this constant pitting against the kids about politics and ideology, about race, about religion, about, and it's just this, I mean, it is a toxic soup of negativity. It is critical pedagogy, critical, not critical thinking. I know that people like to confuse some of these things. It is literally, if I criticized you all day long, everything about you, Dennis, your hair, the way you dress, the way you talk, would you be a happy person? If I made you wallow and asked you every day, are you happy today? Right? How's your day going, Dennis? And maybe, you know, Susie's dog died and they do social emotional learning in the classroom. And now Susie's going to tell everybody, I'm sad today because my dog died yesterday. Well, now poor little Dennis is very sad too because Susie's dog died. And then we're like, okay, now let's do math.
Yeah. And if you if you want to take it a step further to what you're talking about, now, you know, Dennis is sad. And then the next thing comes in is Dennis is sad because James doesn't like me. James is, you know, against me. James' parents are this way or that way. And the pinning between black and white.
Oh, it's,
I mean,
awful.
We see so many videos right now where black students are beating the crap out of a white kid. And you just sit there and say, how did this happen? Because I went to school. When I went to high school, I went to school with a lot of black kids. And you know what? We never fought. We were on the same football team, same baseball team. All right, the black kids usually hung out with the black kids and the white kids usually hung out with the white kids on the weekends, although there was some integration in that. We never fought. Now we see it all over the place.
Yeah, but I don't really think it's a race thing. I really don't. I think they want to foment racial division amongst the kids. But
the leaders do.
Yes, but I don't think...
The kids don't want it.
I think, well, first of all, James Lindsay always says, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. So it's anything in service of destabilization.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. All of it. The sexualization of the kids, the fomenting of the division about race or about religion or ideology or about, you know, well, Susie's mom doesn't like when, you know, doesn't want her to be inclusive and love all children. So Susie's going to have to opt out from this program. So now we're going to ask Susie to leave so that we can talk about... I mean, that's happening in the classroom, right? When they're saying, well, just opt your kid out of this. Well, now I have to separate my child from all of the other kids, and gender ideology shouldn't even be taught in the school. But it's not about race, I don't think. It's just about division so that the elites can have power and everybody else is without power. When in the history of the United States of America have we seen the intentional... not teaching of reading, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the destruction of the nuclear family, the separating of parents and children and husbands and wives in order to control a population.
Absolutely. I mean, you could take it a step further, and I want Dennis to say what DeSantis just did. You could take it a step further in the sense of when you're saying about, you know, crushing the family unit, it is now a good thing for that to happen. They're now even teaching that boys can have babies.
Right.
No, they can't. But when you do that, what you do is you dilute the meaning of a mother and a father being together. Now, I think when I go back in my day, and I know, I mean, you're younger than me by 10 years, but you're still in my realm of where when you were in school, you didn't have a cell phone and you didn't have social media. When I go back and I look at my grammar school days, out of, I don't know, I guess there were a couple hundred kids in our school, maybe two were overweight, none were Spanish speaking only. And now today you look at it, half the kids or more are overweight and half the kids or more. I mean, just from where we left from New York, I mean, we went from a 16% population of, you know, Spanish speaking to about 70% by the time we left. Now with social media being so prevalent, I think it's playing a big role in all the destruction here. But Ron DeSantis, Dennis, tell Tiffany what Ron DeSantis just put.
He
signed a bill.
So he just signed a bill that starting January 1st of next year, 2025, if you're 14 and under, you are not permitted on social media. In fact, if you're 15 or 16, you need parental permission to even have a social media account. So I personally like this because, I mean, when I was 14, I didn't have social media. But I think my question to you would be, you know, like if you compare, let's say TikTok, for example, TikTok in China and even parts in Europe, their video feeds usually promote mathematics, science, even in some cases, agriculture. But when you kind of look at the TikTok here, I mean, those videos exist, but that's not what's being pushed. It's gender ideology, these warped progressive mindsets, video instructions of how to rebel against your parents. I mean, there's that one crazy guy who tries to get kids to do no contact with their parents, Jeffrey Marsh. So,
groomer.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Marsh, you're a groomer.
Groomer, big groomer. So, you know, with this bill, I mean, it's only Florida. I would love to see it on the national scale. But is it more so that do we just need to reformulate social media to be like what it's over in China, where it's actually for educational purposes, or do we just scrap it and say, hey, let's just get kids off of social media altogether because it's just not beneficial for their heads to be in a phone screen all day?
So when you say me, I hope you don't mean government, because that's government in China. And so
yes,
I'm going to have to disagree with you about the bill. HB 1 was the original bill where this information was housed. And Governor DeSantis actually vetoed that bill because there was no parental authorization piece for 15 and 16-year-olds. And I spoke to some parents who said, you know, my kid's an entrepreneur. The way that you market your business and your products is on social media. And I don't want the government telling me that my child can't engage in social media without, if I give permission, then so be it. And I happen to agree with that. So I'm not a fan of the bill. My questions were along the lines of, first of all, you can't legislate like good parenting, like you can't legislate morality. So this is a parenting issue, primarily. Parents are the ones that are giving their kids the phones. And so I had a conversation with someone that was close to this issue, and I asked them, I said, tell me, where do kids access social media? And he said, I don't know what you mean. And I said, well, are they accessing it on their PC? And he said, well, no on their phones. And I said, so what's keeping the government from telling me now that the phones are a problem and bad for kids? And what's to say that the government doesn't tell me now, because they're so much smarter than me, that that my kids shouldn't be allowed to have a phone? And if I canvass the parents that agreed with this issue because they think their parenting is the right parenting and they are fine with this, would they be okay with their child, with the government saying that your kid can't have a phone below a certain age? Because the truth is, you can't just cherry pick certain social media, you know, as Twitter, as X has shown us, you know, someone new can come in and buy a platform and completely change what the engagement looks like.
Right.
So, you know, cherry picking certain social media apps and then, you know, the government picking and choosing what's harmful for your child. You know, McDonald's isn't good for your kids. Should we say that you can't feed your kids at McDonald's? I think it's a really slippery slope. Further on this law, if you'd like to continue to talk about it for a moment, similar laws have been tried across the United States, in Utah, in Ohio, in Arkansas. In Ohio, very interestingly, this law failed in the federal courts because they said it violated the First Amendment rights of the child to access information. That is a whole nother podcast we could do about First Amendment rights and not only having the right for free speech, but then also the right to access and hear information, and children's rights. Where do they start and stop here? And anyway, and so Justice Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice, has written some interesting things about this and about the right of others to be able to bypass a parent to get information to the child. So it's a really interesting area of parental rights that in America before recently really surrounded homeschooling was certainly an area where it was discussed because there's been attempts to, you know, homeschooling used to be illegal. But then also it used to just be around like child protective services. But that's changed now. And so I think this law will be challenged in the court system. I think it's probably not going to be able to continue. So I've got issues. Sorry.
No, well, it's a good point. So then, like, how do we influence more maybe than that the content that is being promoted is entrepreneurship, educational purposes, and not so much kind of the crazier ideology that we see from, like, a Jeffrey Moore?
That's what I wanted to respond to, because if you go back to something a little bit more simple from our day, which is pretty much almost eviscerated at this point, the movie theater. So movie theaters didn't get banned because Blue Lagoon came out with a naked, a naked cast. You had a rating rated X, rated R, rated PG, PG-13,
yeah.
Rated G.
We've all agreed to that, like collectively as a society.
Right. And so if you were a 11-year-old kid trying to go in and see Blue Lagoon because you wanted to see Brooke Shields naked, you weren't allowed to go in.
Right.
So maybe there is a way to where we don't have to ban social media. We don't want to ban the cell phone like we didn't want to ban the movie theater just because they played a naked scene. Maybe there's a way to where those parental controls can really be a little bit more powerful than they are today.
I think so. The other issue that we didn't discuss but does also is super important is a couple things. Anonymous speech rights. And then this issue of age authentication. A lot of concerns. They say there will be a third party that will do age authentication. They won't actually hold the data. I mean, can we trust anybody to not, you know, be holding the data? And I mean, it's just ridiculous, the idea that we would be so naive to think that, I mean, maybe there are some lawyers and some protections, but anyway, you know, so how are they getting the age verification? You know, are they, kids don't have a license. So what are you going to give? Are you going to give your social security number? Well, that's concerning. Are you going to do some type of biometric scan? That's always effective, but also concerning. There are a lot of really important areas around this. I think we should be talking about them more, because what I discovered from this law and other laws that I'm seeing is that we're going to get some really bad policy because people are not really thinking through a lot of these different things. And first and foremost, when we make law and when we govern in the United States, it needs to be done from the position of our foundational principles. You cannot negate any of those in service of anything else. That's the foundation. That's the threshold, right? And so, I think the future looks a lot like smarter policymaking in America, and that's going to take a lot of work. You know, I'm working on trying to build out, you know, and collaborate with others to try to be forward thinking.
I always believe that there is a lot of justification in the term keep it simple.
Yeah.
And education in my day was really simple in the sense that I went to school and I came home from school. I did my homework. And when I was at school, I had my subjects and I learned my subjects. And my mother, my parents were divorced. This is why I just use my mother. My mother was an active participant in my education.
Sure.
She went to all the conferences. She actually, I remember I asked you this the first time I did, she walked me into kindergarten. I remember she walked me into first grade. I mean, she was very, very involved in my education and periodically would have to write a note to the teacher asking explanation as to why did Dennis only get a 50 on this test? Or is Dennis handing in all of his homework? Or things like that. It feels as if the parent has been stripped from the education process of their child. Am I over-exaggerating that, or is that a big thing? Have the parents been removed from that process?
I think that the schools have been tasked with more and more of the responsibilities of the parent over the course of the past 40 years.
Okay.
Really, since the course of education, it's just the natural expansion of the system, I think, and the fact that there were some parents who weren't doing for their kids, so the school would pick up the slack, and then, you know, well, some kids are now we're at the point where everyone gets free breakfast and lunch because some kids were getting it, and I mean, there's a list. I'll bring it the next time I come of like everything that's been added to the public school day since the start of public school, and the different things that need to be taught in the schools that are mandated or required to be taught, like, you know, like rabies awareness, for example, or something like that. Like just little things that, and it adds up. And the schools have done more and more in place of the parent, and we're at a really important and delicate place in America, and the future of our country hinges on it. I believe it in my heart, where the federal government is looking to expand their influence and reach into education through something called community schools and the CDC. We all know the impact the CDC has had on our lives, right? The power that they had for a non-regulatory agency. It was crazy the amount of power they wielded. We know the unions like expansion in the schools because that means more money for them, and that's what they care about, money and power, and the Democrat Party. Community schools will only further increase the role of the schools in the community and in the services that will be provided to the students. They want to have school-based health centers. They have them in lots of places across the United States where community partners like Planned Parenthood, for example, come in and can deliver services. So imagine Planned Parenthood is now in every school across America. And these schools are full service to the community for the needs of the community. And the best example I had as a school board member was when I saw the way that the schools were used for the hurricanes. Mm-hmm. When the school in Brooklyn, you remember the school in Brooklyn that got closed, Eric Adams, they closed it one night.
Oh, about a month ago, to remind everybody, let me tell them what Tiffany is referring to is we covered this story on our program is that illegal aliens were in the midst of a New York storm. And so what they did was they took a school and they told everybody, you're not coming to school, go home. We're putting the illegal aliens in the school for safe harbor.
Switching to virtual learning.
Yeah.
And we're going to use the school. And Eric Adams came out the next day and he said, the schools are community assets. And that to me was just that, like we can do whatever we want with them.
Yeah.
Because they're community assets, right? And that is just a slippery, slippery slope. We have gotten so far from true education and educating kids. But we have a chance, Dennis. I just want to tell you.
Okay.
We have a chance to stop it. Because right now, the federal government, the funding into the states is anywhere between 3 and 16% of the state budget.
Okay.
Any given state. Mm-hmm. In Florida, I think it's probably around 9%, 10%. Okay. It was. So I'll have to check that. What the federal government wants is more, right? They want to give more money. They want the states to be more dependent on them because the more dependency that the schools and the states have on the federal government, the more control the federal government has.
Right.
They go through the grant system and they say, you know, you do X, Y, and Z, and then you get this money, what have you. It's how they push their stuff into the schools. Community schools will put that on steroids. There will never be enough money to be able to service all of the needs of a community out of the schools. I mean, we're talking about every medical need that the child has is going to be happening in the schools, oftentimes with a lowered age of consent down to 12 or lower, or in some states there is no law stopping children from interacting with mental health professionals, for example, and getting mental health care in the schools. But we're talking full service vaccines, everything in the schools. Yeah, it's very scary. And there's no amount of money, and the CDC is pushing it. In the latest budget, there was $83 million for social emotional learning in schools across the United States. There was $150 million for community schools and pushing community schools. When Randy Weingarten went in front of Congress to discuss learning loss during COVID.
Randy Weingarten is the head of the teachers union.
The American Federation of Teachers, which is part of the AFL-CIO.
Okay.
What was her answer for the learning loss that happened during COVID after she, by the way, was responsible for that? Community schools. So much money.
That brings us into this next section.
I wanted to ask you about the teachers unions. Like, in terms of like just their power, I feel like they always have so much sway and so much power when it comes to the their decision making. And like you said, a lot of them have quote unquote Democrat ties. So where do they get so much of their funding from?
Yeah, so they get their funding from us, the taxpayers. Isn't that ironic? We pay for our own demise.
That's actually insane.
And so the teachers unions are the foot soldiers of the progressive far left, which have taken over the Democrat Party.
Yeah.
My father-in-law is a lovely man who's a Democrat, and we were having a conversation the other day, and I just wanted to say to him, like, he's a bit older. Like, the Democrat Party that you think you're a part of doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, no way.
He doesn't know. I think there are a large portion of Americans that just don't realize. Mm. But the 99% of the contributions that the teachers unions make go to Democrats. So, I mean, it's just, they are the foot soldiers, the army. They're, when you are getting out the vote, when you are doing this work, you need people. They have an army, 3 million members. I mean, it's huge. And then the money that filters in and the advocacy work that they're able to do because of that. And then they gain entrance to all of their nonprofit friends. How did the gender guides, the gender transition guides in Florida that went through the student services departments, right? They went around the policymakers, the school board, and they got into the schools through student services. How did those get in? Those got in through an organization, a nonprofit called Equality Florida. What the left does so beautifully is have a continued engagement with their voters. All year long, 12 months a year, right? So in 24-month election cycles, they're having a constant engagement with their voters on the issues they care about. What does the left care about? How do they rally their voters?
In what sense?
Well, abortion, right? That's a big issue, right?
Yeah.
Like the left's issues.
Of course.
Yeah. So they are having a constant sustained engagement. So when it's time to get out the vote with teachers unions or what have you, and you're 6 months out from an election, they just flip a switch.
That's it.
They fund through the C3. They can move a portion into the C4. They flip a switch, and now they're mobilized to get out the vote, right, on issues.
Which
not on candidates. That's important.
Yeah.
So, and that's the part of where, you know, I thought the teachers union was in place. I mean, my best friend is a teacher. And, you know, he's been in there for, I don't know, it's got to be 30 years now. He's
getting ready
to retire. Yeah, thanks. And in the beginning, it felt like the teachers union was there to protect the teacher. So this way they got their tenure and they got their benefits and they always,
which makes sense.
I would say, hey, we've had unions in this guy. You know, you have the PBA, you got, but now it's almost like the teachers union is more about controlling what it is that your child does versus protecting the teacher. Is that me just buying into headlines? I mean, to Dennis's point, they are so powerful and yes, okay, numbers, you know, numbers, but it's almost as if they're single-handedly taking over what education is going to be in this country.
They run the schools. Mm. Oh, they run the schools. And to be clear, again, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. The goal is to destabilize the child, to make them to be it's the building of the Red Guard in America. Against family, against tradition, against faith, against all of those things. They'll do that, and they'll accomplish that by whatever means necessary, whether it's through queer theory and the destabilization of the child through the sexual ways we've talked about, and we'll talk about at the end. Or other things. But I think the bigger issue that we haven't talked about yet is the fact that this is a global movement. the whole push of like decolonization, for example, you see that happening all over the world. We see the sexual education stuff happening all over the world in schools. Maybe not in Russia. That's like the joke now. It's not happening in Russia. But, you know, it is happening everywhere. And it is a real destabilization of America as a world power. And this idea of one world government. And, you know, you see the WHO, right? The World Health Organization now. I think we're like, I don't even know how many weeks away from a treaty that they want all nations to sign, which will basically take away all American sovereignty for handling different issues that we have when it comes to health.
And the next pandemic is all based on one.
Yeah, I mean, they totally screwed it up, by the way. Yeah. They got everything wrong and yet somehow think that they would have the authority that if only we had just coordinated our lockdowns better, this would have worked. But that's where we are. And I think it's just really important for people to understand that the United Nations, UNESCO, the World Economic Forum, but United Nations specifically, we can focus on that for a second, like the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, Agenda 2030. Anthony Blinken was at the Defense of Democracy Summit in Seoul recently, and he was speaking about how AI is going to help us. And he said about 80% of the Sustainable Development Goals can be accelerated by the use of AI. That should freak everybody out. I was watching a live stream of Anthony Blinken speaking in Seoul at like 11:30 at night, texting my friend, like, I can't even believe I am listening to this happening right now. But nobody, so when we talk about what's happening in American schools, it's really just in service of destabilizing America. They don't want America to be the beacon of light that we've been to the rest of the world for forever.
See, this is the part, this is why I'm glad Dennis asked you the question about who's funding them, because you said we are. And, you know, you can say that our government is funded by us, but then again, I look at it and I say, oh, is it really funded by us or is it funded by special interest money, sort of like China, those things there. What I can't connect the dots to, Tiffany, maybe because I'm just looking for common sense and there's none left, is that if you have the teachers union and they are trying to improve the schools, how is it that they are completely ignoring the beginning of this conversation?
Because because it's not their priority. If you look at their...
But it should be.
Okay, yeah, but it should be, but it's not. So I don't live in a fairy tale world of I want something to be. I'm living in reality. What I know when I look at the AFT or the National Education Association, which is actually the bigger one that has more control in the Democrat Party, I believe, but they kind of slip under the radar. Yeah. That's Becky Pringle, who runs that, but it could be anybody. But when you look at... I'm trying to think about how to when you look at their they have like a conference every summer.
Okay.
If we could pull it up right now, I would say pull up the NEA or the AFT's tenets that they all vote on and uphold at their agenda. Ukraine, abortion. I mean, there's not reading and writing and math. It's just not the priority. Do I think that, I think, first of all, just to be clear, I love teachers. My mom was a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher. I believe parents are their children's first educators. I love teachers. So it's not teachers, but the unions are just not about the schools anymore. The schools are just a tool. They're just Dennis, is there anything else? Is there any other entity or any other group or that has the scope as far as the money, the employees, and the physical spaces, the capital, let's say, right, as the public school system in America? Is there any other government entity that comes close?
No, I don't think so. I think it's also, if you really see, now we can, you want to talk about having another podcast. I believe that there is a concerted effort here. You've touched on it a lot, but I don't know if we've actually hit the button yet. So when I look at TikTok, see, I probably disagree with you a bit on the whole ban thing because I just look at it differently. Whether I'm looking at the border or I'm looking at our education or I'm looking at social media, specifically with TikTok, my time in news and media, I almost wish I didn't enter it because then I wouldn't know what I know. And it would be easier. You know, ignorance is bliss, right? When I look at two entities, you got the Muslim Brotherhood. We'll put them to the side for right now. And then you got China. They both have the same sort of doctrine. Their doctrine is you can take America over without ever shooting a missile, without ever having to drive another plane into a building. You take it over from within. Mm-hmm. And I think what they see right now is a fat, lazy population of the United States, which is only getting fatter and lazier. I could go up to anybody and ask them, who's the number one influencer on YouTube? And they can tell me who it is. And then I say, who represents you in Congress? And they can't tell me.
True.
So when you look at that and you see how fat and lazy and ignorant we're becoming as a country, I believe the Chinese use TikTok like they do to water down our children. So it's an easier thing to take over one day in terms of the United States. And if you keep the people dumb, if you fly in and ship in and walk in millions of third world migrants, you are going to bring down the education. You're going to bring down what it is called tomorrow. You and I, maybe my kids, will be the last generation of critical thinkers who can create a Moms for Liberty, who can create a warehouse.
Yeah, your grandchildren won't be able to leave 15 minutes out of their city if they have their way.
They wouldn't know how to get out of the city. That's the part. I just think the way that you conquer America,
yeah, you're right,
long term, is you water down the brains.
Long term, it's now.
Long term.
We're here now.
We're here now. Let me ask you this. How many times you said in a conversation, oh, thank God I'll be dead for that. I won't see that.
No, I never think that way.
I know you don't, because you're trying to fight for your kids and your grandkids. But to that extent, the things that are going to happen when you and I are not gone, if it doesn't stop, this country will no longer be number one. It won't even be in the top five.
That's why I say to people, when people will tell me that they won't stand up right now, or it's too hard, or whatever, here's what I say. I say, well, I guess I'll see you in the gulag then, and we can talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you talk about all these organizations and why it is, even colleges, look where colleges are getting their money. It's coming from foreign influence, and those foreign influencers want to see the U.S. dollar and the United States of America go to its knees. And that's why I believe that when you really look at the chain of command, the WHO, the World Economic Forum, you could even say the Obamas and all their ilk, the Chinese, I believe it's so high up, and that money and all that power is going down and influencing these different organizations.
They capture the institutions.
They capture them. And then it's like, we sit here and say, wait a second, how could the people who were teachers union not care that the kids can't read and write?
I just looked into the AFT conference for their schedule from last summer in 2023. Their big topic loads were climate change, gender affirming care, and even attacking DeSantis's voucher program, which was to help parents get their kids into private schools. And Randy Weingarten just completely, I guess, said it was radical and extreme.
Well, one other thing that we could hit, and then I want to go into the third section of the thing here. I mean, just look at the media, right? Look at the way the media.
Yeah, they're captured.
They're totally captured.
Yeah, here's the thing. So I'm really new. You know, three years at Moms for Liberty has been going. But during COVID, I learned, I just had to say, well, why not me? Like, there would be a million reasons why not me, but then why not me? Why not you? Why isn't it every mom in America that's standing up? And so that's what our moms are all about. I just want to be clear. Like, we are re-engaging people in their civic processes across the United States of America. It's a very special thing to be a part of. 83% of the candidates that we endorsed for school board last year had never run for office before. That is my, like, most, I just love it so much. And so when I have media, for example, that call me, especially right now, there's been this whole, you can watch the flow of media, and you can see, like, the unions, and they try to, you know, like, okay, we need to get our friends at the Brookings Institution to do studies, and, you know, and then they come out with all of this stuff, and we can watch it, and they want to try to say, well, Moms for Liberty is, you know, on the down, you know, side, and they've had so much controversy and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, 83% of the people that ran for office that we endorsed had never even thought about running for office before. They had never done it.
That's power.
We're
that's
changing
influence.
America.
Yep. That's power. That's influence. And that's why they don't want you there. I mean, look, even
it's
if you, I was going to say about the media, you know, let's take, and now we're going to start to transition into the last part here. And so I want to discuss something with DeSantis bill. And then I want to play the joy clip. And then we're going to cut out to the back. If you just look at the way the media has lied about the Don't Say Gay bill,
right,
which never, ever says gay, that was a way, in my opinion, to water down Ron DeSantis at a time when he was at his height,
yeah,
by making him sound marginalized and make him sound as if he, and this is what 60 Minutes tried to do to you, you know, where, oh, you're against gay people. No, it wasn't against that. I'm not against gay people. You want to be gay? Go right ahead. But when you're going to bring it into my school, and you're going to bring it into my school in the sense of, and it wasn't even about being gay.
The least interesting thing about an elementary school student should be their sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. The fact that any conversations between parents, between adults and children are happening in school about gender ideology, sexual orientation of the child or of the teacher, mind you, yeah, is crazy town.
Absolutely.
That is, Scott Pelley wants to try to say, like, oh, what's a groomer? That's a groomer, Scott. When adults tell children to keep secrets from their parents, mm, that is predatory behavior.
Absolutely.
Groomer.
Absolutely.
And I don't care if it's sexual. I had a reporter the other day that tried to say, well, you know, you make it sound like everyone's a sexual deviant. I said, no. It has nothing to do with if it's sexual or not. I don't care. If you're telling my kid to keep a secret from me, you are creating a problem in my relationship and my raising of my child.
Listen, we just did a story yesterday about a drag queen that now is getting hit up for all these different crimes against minors.
Yeah.
And how many times have teachers or schools brought in a drag queen without the permission of the parent and subjecting them to
that? I was going to say, and that's on the crazier side with the drag queens. I mean, we just did a story last week or the week before, average-looking teacher from California running a secret LGBTQ club at a California school. Not telling the parents.
Is there a password?
Purposely kept the club from being put in the school newsletter. So it's all shady, and it's just it's ridiculous. Because to your point, I want to be a parent one day, and if I were to find out that some teacher is running a secret club, I'd be pulling the kid out of the school.
Hold your comment about this, because I could see where this conversation is going. All right. So for those of you on Facebook, those on YouTube, those of you on Apple Podcasts, this is when we now bring the conversation over to Team DML. You could get to Team DML by one or two different ways. You go to teamdml.com. You could register up as a member as low as $2.50 per month. We have a bunch of different memberships for you there. Thousands of people, all like-minded, and you get to get this whole show and every other show that we do in its full, both on video and in audio. If you're on Facebook, if you're on YouTube, if you're on Apple and you have a smartphone, you could then download for free the DML News app from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Put the notifications on. Go to tab 5. It says Interact. Click Team DML Memberships, and voila. There are so many things you get. I don't have enough time here to go over all of them, but you'll get it when you go and check it out. And if you could join us, fantastic, because it makes it so this way we don't have to use Google ads. We don't have to use Facebook ads. We don't have to, Tiffany said it before, we're paying for our own demise. Every time we give money to Google and Facebook, all we do is empower the giant to censor us more. So please catch the rest of this conversation, because this is where it starts to get really juicy. And in fact, to just give you a little taste of it, we're going to end the part of this program with a clip from Tiffany on Joy Reid talking about book banning and about dildos. Play the clip, Ryan.
Do keyword searches and find certain keywords.
Like rape?
You can find sure.
Or anal rape or dildo.
What you find is the keywords that you find, the N-word, anything, words like you just used, you'll get out of context passages from the book. And then based on that, Moms for Liberty members are going to places like Broward County School Board meetings, reading out of context passages from these books, and then demanding that the school board remove them.
So you have incest, rape, pedophilia. Joy, you said you'd let me answer, so
sure.
I'm going to answer
Please
for
do.
You. In what context is a strap-on dildo acceptable for public school? That's my question to you. Tell me what the context around the strap-on dildo or the rape of a minor child by a teacher.
Hold on a second. No.
Get the Dennis Michael Lynch podcast every day by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and download the DML News app from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store for breaking news, merchandise, films, exclusive content, and Team DML.